Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guys, I'm so sorry about the rain. Is everyone okay? It's quite cozy.
That is the most womanly thing you can do, Scarlett. Guys, I am so... Can I just apologise, first of all, for weather, generally? I'm so sorry about it.
Hello, and welcome to the Feminists Don't Wear Pink podcast, based on the book Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies. I'm your host, Scarlett Curtis. I'm a writer, activist, proud feminist, and curator of our book, and host of this podcast. Today's episode is live from Latitude Festival. I have been attending Latitude since I was 12 years old, and over the last 12 years, I have done a lot at the festival. I have cried there, danced there, fallen in love there, gotten covered in mud there, had a panic attack there, actually many panic attacks there, and visited the festival twice in a wheelchair. It is honestly one of my favourite places on earth, and it was a ridiculously surreal experience to get to do an actual show there myself. My guests this episode are kind of amazing. Catherine Ryan is a comedian, writer, presenter, and general incredible woman and hero of mine. She's been on literally every TV show of all time, and her latest stand-up special, Glitter Room, just hit Netflix and is incredible if you have not watched it yet. Connie Huck is a writer, presenter, DJ, and author of the upcoming children's novel, Cookie, which is just brilliant. And if you have any children in your life, I would thoroughly recommend reading it. And actually, if you don't have children in your life, I read it myself and it's great. And finally, Aisling B is an actress, comedian, and writer. She is one of the kindest and funniest people I know, and she actually volunteered to be on this podcast because I was too scared to ask her. She too has been on every panel show, won every stand-up award, and she's a really incredible supporter of the Repeal the 8 campaign. Her new TV show, This Way Up, airs on Channel 4 this August, and I'm very excited to watch it. It was a true delight to sit down with these three amazing women, and I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I loved recording it.
Hi everyone! Okay, you can stop clapping now. There's so many people here! Thank you all so much for coming. This is ridiculously exciting. I have been coming to Latitude since I was 12 years old. I've worn many awful outfits here. I came here once in a wheelchair, which was fun, and loads of people gave me free things. And now I'm here doing a podcast. Okay, I'm going to introduce our guest. Our first guest is a comedian, writer, presenter, and generally the most incredible woman, Catherine Ryan. Our next guest is a writer, presenter, DJ, and author of the upcoming children's book, Cookie and the Most Annoying Boy in the World, Connie Huck. And our last guest is an actress, comedian, and writer. She is one of the kindest and funniest people I know, Aisling B. Okay, we did all the admin. Now I feel calmer. Okay, first question for all of you. Are you a feminist?
No!
Never. I hate them all. Mm. Definitely a feminist.
Good.
It's great for the brand, though. I think we'll all be fair to say
Is anyone here not? Is anyone here not a feminist?
I don't know if my 15-year-old brother is.
I think some people don't understand what it means.
Yeah.
Someone's not a feminist out of ignorance, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of us should definitely become a misogynist because I think it's a real gap in the market, like a real Tommy Lauren type, like...
Yeah. Can I just say, look real hot in those boots?
Thank
I'm not really
you.
Listening to what you're saying. See, I'm
man being the misogynist.
If someone did become a misogynist, they'd get loads of followers on Twitter, though, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
It would be so popular, like Katie Hopkins.
Yeah. That's it.
We actually did. Oh,
anyone
sorry.
Want to up their followers, become a misogynist.
We actually did so many events around the launch of this book that by the end, I actually wasn't a feminist anymore. And I hated
You're
women.
Like, I'm
and
over
the
that. I'm moving
yeah,
on.
I've done.
Done.
Okay, topical question. Do you think there is pressure for women to look a certain way at festivals? Because we all just got ready and it took me about half an hour and it took my brothers about 5 minutes. And I know that's not like the biggest feminist issue, but I did find it quite annoying.
It probably shows.
This is washing out all the misogynists.
5 minutes.
Begun!
I've got two young children who are here and they were so elated to be sleeping in a caravan last night that there was no sleep had by any of us. So I had no choice but to get ready in 5 minutes. Hence, I look like I've been dragged through a hedge backwards.
Lovely.
So I know what it's like to be your brothers right now. Yeah. In fact, I do most of the time because my children do that quite a lot.
Yeah. But how, I mean, in general, you're a very... How do you feel? Because I love getting dressed. I love doing my makeup. But sometimes I do get angry at the time that we spend doing that kind of stuff.
I think blokes should spend more time doing that stuff, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Well, if you do look at Halloween or something like that, and that's what I love about drag, it gives a safe place for men to enjoy what we've enjoyed for thousands of years. The art of decorating yourself and dolling yourself up into something else is quite a ritual. My sister had a lovely thing she said about Pride, that what the lovely thing about Pride is, especially if you ever go into London during Pride, everyone is wearing their maximum version of themselves. All of the maximum colours that they want, as opposed to when you're put into suits, when you're in an office, you're covering up who you are. It's almost like it can be an explosion of who you are in the outside during Pride. And I actually think there's a lovely thing about being able to like cover yourself in biodegradable glitter and thank you, Catherine. You saw my tweet. And just like putting on the most colourful self.
Yeah.
Isn't that what RuPaul says? We're all born naked and everything else is drag.
Yeah. Guys, I'm so sorry about the rain. Is everyone okay? It's quite cozy.
That is the most womanly thing you can do, Scarlett. Guys, I am so... Can I just apologise, first of all, for weather, generally? I'm so sorry about it. Oh, I'm so embarrassed for you, Scarlett. It's actually embarrassing.
It's Scarlett's
Ashling,
ploy.
I didn't even ask you to do the podcast, so...
No, I just walked on.
It's good.
Me on stage.
Because we're covered, so this is good. It's good weather.
Yeah, it's cozy,
this.
It's cozy. Yeah. It's like we're preparing for the army. Yeah. Okay, Catherine, I want to begin by asking a question.
I like the percussion that I get for the question. Like,
there's a question coming right now.
It's going to make your answer very jazzy.
Yeah.
Do it in time to the raindrops.
So,
pizzicato.
I just watched Glitterum, and I think a lot of people here just went to your stand-up special.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Sorry if you saw my butt.
One of the things, I loved it so much, as I just told you quite profusely, but one thing that I think is really special is it's basically a kind of ode to being a single mum.
Yeah.
And what that phrase means. And it's so beautiful. Do you think that... Is that a conscious effort on your part in your comedy to kind of start breaking down the way we think about that word and what we talk about?
Yeah, I always write comedy in the moment of what's going on in my life. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I had just bought a property, which I definitely didn't think I would ever do in the UK. And I had just been through a breakup. And I was really questioning why I think women get saddled with this. No matter what you achieve, if you don't have a man, then you're not good enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, yas to you. And I just think it's so ridiculous. And people do get angry. When I say people, almost people. Men get angry about... they get angry about the special sometimes. And all that I say is that... I don't need a man. You can have one if you like one, but I've learned that for the first time very recently, we're allowed to own property, open a bank account, buy a house without the signature of a man. You used to need that legally to be a person.
Yeah.
And they get mad at me. I'm like, get mad at that.
This is so true. You know, women didn't used to be able to claim unemployment benefit if they were married, like not even that long ago. And people don't realize how society's just so geared up. Sorry, guys, I'm going off on one.
This is what the podcast's about.
Yeah.
Sorry. You
no
can go.
Apologies, guys. Screw you all. No, but the thing is, and there's a brilliant book, Caroline Criado Perez.
Yes, I
Invisible
love
Women,
that book.
Which just shows. Yeah, give that.
What's the name
round
of the book?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the name of the book?
Invisible Women.
And it shows the gender bias in society, which is kind of stealth gender bias. It's gender bias you don't even realise. So it's not this sort of obvious things where it's all geared up to be a men's world. But, you know, things are changing, but not enough. And what you said is so right, is that women are often, you know, so many times I've been called down, this is Charlie Booker's wife, Connie. And it's like, well, no, I'm a person.
That's what,
I'm not just someone's wife, you know. And women get so much flack that men don't get just because. And it's not because people are sexist. It's not because society is sexist. It's just because of social norms.
Yeah. I mean, society is also a bit sexist.
It takes a long
sexist.
Time to get rid of those. Yeah. And I talked about this on The Guilty Feminist the other week. But there's, have you been watching Gentleman Jack? The show Gentleman Jack? So this won't spoil anything, but there's a scene in it where Suran Jones, a woman that Suran Jones has been seeing, says, oh, you're so basically you're waiting for your husband die and then you'll come to me because I've got money and that's what you're doing. And she was talking about it from an emotional point of view. If they didn't have sort of hats and corsets on, it probably would have been a classic couple chat in a cafe, but they're in a carriage and it's passed. Spoiler alert. But the girl who she was seeing said, yeah, that's all I have. All I have is to sleep my way up. I don't have anything else. Yeah. I don't have rights. I don't have my own money. This is the only thing I can do, is just to marry my way into things. And those echoes, it takes generations to get rid of those echoes, even the words we use, the old books we use, the stories we have.
Completely.
It takes a long time to get rid of that stuff.
Yeah, and it just sinks into your brain and it becomes about how you feel about yourself. It's not like you're consciously playing into the way that society feels. I think it just becomes how you value yourself. Connie, I'm really interested in you saying that, because you are married and your marriage is quite public and, you know, you're known as part of a couple. Was it hard for you, after being so successful and so independent, was it hard to kind of suddenly be in that thing, which I'm sure is beautiful, but is also a leftover of that kind of time?
You know what I find is really hard in society in general is that, you know, and Catherine kind of hit upon it really well a bit earlier, in that, so I remember before I got married to Charlie, when I was single, it's that thing of, if you're a woman, people expect, oh, have you found anyone? I'll fix you up with someone, you know, that thing. Whereas people don't do that to blokes. If
never.
A bloke is single, they never do that. It's like society expects you, if you're a woman, especially if you're a woman in your mid to late 30s upwards, that you're kind of not complete.
Yeah.
If you
they don't believe you. If you say, no, I'm choosing this, they're like, oh, that's really sad.
If you think I'm happy as I am, they're like, she's not happy. She's just saying that. You're proving it to us or to yourself. And it really works.
Talk about my mum, even though she's here, but the other day she finally looked at me and went, oh, you're too busy for a boyfriend. I was like, yeah, it's taken you a while, but yeah, it's actually a choice. It's not a kind of thing. And people do look at you funny still.
Yeah.
I think
and
what's so important about seeing things like, say, Catherine, what I love about your special, and for to see something and someone speaking about it is, and even when I was watching it, I was like, oh, yeah. Because the more versions of those stories there are, the better. Catherine and I both grew up in single parent families. And so I often think, like, when I think of a boyfriend, I think of X, Y, and Z. But when I think of a house and what a family looks like, I'm kind of like, oh, where'd you put
him?
Where'd you put the man during the day, though? Like, does he have a room, or where is there? I don't understand. And if you only see that as a model of a family, and then like, and I, to be honest, I will say there's a bit of a link between dead or absent fathers and women succeeding in comedy. Look at the name. But if you see that model and you know it's possible, and you know it's possible to have a very happy, successful life, it's not the craziest jump. And maybe only once you start going out and talking about it. And I haven't seen many people talk about it the way you've talked about
it. But I want people, not just girls, but I want people to know that they can be that complete without needing someone. Because I've been in relationships that were bad for me and quite dangerous. And I got into those at vulnerable times when I really thought I either had shame about being a single mother, or I felt vulnerable and I went, oh, I really need someone. You'll do with the axe.
And also, but even when you say that, people do look at you like you're deluding yourself.
Which what I is find hard is there's a different with. Stigma between, say, a mother who's chosen that life. And I grew up in a family where my mother was a widow. And I remember one time being picked up from school and my mother was late. And this Irish woman said, "Oh God, where's your mammy?" And I'm like, "Oh, she's just late." "And you're on your own here by the gate, are you? Oh God." And I was like, and I just remembered the aura or the energy around her face. And she was like, "Oh God, and where's your daddy?" And I just knew, it was the first time I could sort of seen judgment before. And I was like, "He's dead." And I could see the relief on her face. Like, "Oh God, a noble mother on her own. That one's all right. You'll still go to heaven, my child." And just this idea that the stronger is the chosen life of that is it, there's a stigma attached to the idea that you would choose or leave, you know.
But
in
Connie,
some way,
how was it for you going from that to being part of a couple? Did you kind of have to figure it out in your head?
I mean, there is that thing of being someone's wife, which is a bit, it's kind of a bit annoying.
It's the thing that makes me almost most angry in the world, except for Michael from Love Island.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it makes me furious.
Yeah, because you're a person in your own right. We're all sort of people with lots of different feathers to our bow. Is that no feathers to our cap? What's to our bow? Strings? I don't know. What are those rubbish sayings that people say? Anyway, something like that. And, you know, you mentioned the book that I've got coming out, and what we were just saying earlier about how it's changing social norms and how people perceive everything in general. And I think you can only do that by working on children. So, for instance, We don't eat other humans, right? None of you eat other humans, right? Yeah. Okay, good.
What? I did last night. Am I right?
Well, no, I'm getting to the point.
From Love Island, I would eat.
Because we're disgusted by the thought. So if, I don't know, all children... I'm not vegetarian, but I'm trying hard. But I didn't grow up as a vegetarian. All my friends that grew up as vegetarians, they're sort of as disgusted about eating meat as I would be about eating another human being, because it's all conditioning. Like, we don't eat snake. It's just sort of what you're used to. There's a wasp on your breast. Shall I intervene? Sorry, I've digressed. Okay, it's gone. Has it gone?
We might need a man to get rid of it.
So back to changing society.
He's
from
looking
Catherine's
for sugar.
Breast.
Should we get...
He's okay. Not going to hurt her. She's calm. Wasps can tell that she's calm. Good aura. So if we start with kids and sort of teach values of equality and you know, inclusivity and sort of minorities, that's another thing. I've always grown up being called a minority. And when I first got my job on Blue Peter, it was like, first British Bangladeshi gets a job on TV on Blue Peter, you know. And everyone's like, first British Bangladeshi. I was like, yeah, but I can present as well, honestly, I'm a person. Yeah. I'm all right. Yeah, and I'm brown. But the point is that we're all minorities in this big, amazing majority that makes it the melting pot that it is. Mm. And you could be a minority, I don't know, because you like your shirt and no one else does. I do like your shirt. It's an example.
Whoa.
This is just an example.
Because it's a bold choice. To be fair, it is a bold choice.
But there's so many situations where you're an outsider or a minority or other. But the thing is, we all have been in those situations.
Yeah.
And by flagging it up, you have to go through that sort of tokenism. We have to go through this annoying bullshit phase of switching around before it can become the norm.
I was told by a really right-wing MP the other day that I would never, ever get into politics because of my hair. And I've never wanted to get into politics. And I was like, right, I will see you in the Houses of Parliament.
But also, like, Donald Trump, he's well known for his hair.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really interested in that. Because one thing I'm very obsessed with feminism is not, you know, we all know that people can be horrible. And like the man that said I'd never get in because my hair and I just shouted at him. But the worst part is when it goes into your subconscious and you start believing the things that the patriarchy is telling you. So how, when you were that young and you were going on Blue Peter and there were all the headlines saying first British Bangladeshi, how did you still have the confidence to push through and not kind of feel othered?
This is really awful. But I think it did sort of make me sort of racist against my own, because I was so busy trying to prove how normal I am. And I remember, and I think
how normal as well, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's a horrible way. And you know, but it's in feminism, it's in, you know, having a disability, anything, minority, your shirt. But the point is that I remember I went, so it started earlier than that. I grew up in quite a middle class suburban neighborhood, and I was sort of, my parents saved every penny to send me to private school, so I was always the kid that didn't go on the skiing trips and the sort of, I always felt like the sort of inferior, substandard one. And I'd want to sort of be like the cool girls sort of flicking my hair. And I do remember being really young and this kid pointing me at the playground again, ha ha, she's from India, right? I know, I was quite young at primary school and I remember thinking, no, I'm not. And in my head, I was like, I'm from Bangladesh, so I'm not lying, I'm not from India. But I know, externally, I was saying, no, I'm not, because I think I just want to be like you guys.
Like everyone else, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you do start becoming like that. And I watched the OJ, has anyone seen the OJ Simpson documentary?
Yes.
Yeah. You see that bit at the beginning where he's trying to be the jock and fit in. And I kind of thought, oh, this is awful, but I can relate to that a bit.
Yeah.
And yet I'm watching going, he's awful. Look how racist he is against his own.
No, but I think we all do it. It's even like girls that say, you know, oh, I'm only friends with guys and I actually don't like other women, and which is my worst thing I can say. But it's the same kind of thing. It's like we want to other ourselves from the groups we're a part of.
And then there's a question of when you lean into that as a power. I mean, look at how many people are here because they associate with a term or something they fall under. And I think sometimes you can be afraid of losing your complexity as a person so much that to be identified as something feels like a loss, whereas actually there's a lot of power in being Irish. You identify as Irish, Catherine. Ireland definitely takes you in, or like one of our own. But there can be a power in also in identifying with your community. It's just when you don't have authorship over it, when someone else puts it on you rather than you saying, I'm proud to be from Bangladesh, or am I proud that my family came from Bangladesh?
I mean, the more minorities there are in a majority, the more interesting. Yeah. You know, nowadays, when I was growing up, so I was embarrassed that my parents ate curry at home, because curry isn't what it is today. Yeah. It'd be like, you know, there weren't even extractor fans in those days. I'm very old. And the thing is, you know, if I had a plate, I'd think, Mum, Dad, don't, whatever you do, you know, can we just have fish fingers and baked beans? And we did have fish fingers and baked beans. But the point is, you know, I mean, I'm saying we didn't have curry every night, but I was sort of embarrassed of it.
Which,
and now, look, on a high street, we've got Wagamamas and Chiquitos and you can have Italian and this and that. But so multiculturalism and everything, all the things that make people other, bring so much to a society. And actually, going to the point of women in the workplace have done amazing things because they see things differently than men. Yeah. So you bring something new to an equation, and it's all the minorities that make progress better and make society a better place.
I have this plan that if after we leave the EU, for anyone who voted leave, you can only order English food on Deliveroo. It's like a block put on your thing. Great. Catherine, I want to ask you about, so we called this book Feminists Don't Wear Pink because I grew up thinking I wasn't a feminist because I liked wearing tutus and I liked having my hair done and I cared more about makeup than I did about politics for my whole life. And then I realised actually that was just bullshit. You have been very open about having cosmetic surgery done, about your love of clothes and you look incredible. How did it take, did you always know you're a feminist? How did you align that side of you with your feminism? Because I think cosmetic surgery particularly is still, there's a huge argument around it in feminism, and it's one of the things I think we haven't really sorted out. You know how we're like, we've got a checklist that we're working through. I think that's one of the things we're still like, I don't really understand if this is good or bad.
No, that's a tricky one. I feel very Eminem, I am whatever you say I am. If I wasn't, then why would I say I am? So sometimes when people joke, like, you've had all this plastic surgery, then I just on stage go, yeah, and I've had all this plastic surgery. I got breast implants in 2004, back when it was still dangerous, y'all. I know.
Just say I'm an early adopter, everyone.
You were early on the trend.
Thank you for that. I always say it could be those little goldfish you win at the carnival. I don't know what's in there. They've died. But my feminist journey was a tricky one because I definitely grew up in a feminist household. My mom is and was always this the woman who did everything and didn't wait for a man and always worked three jobs and was a great role model. But and even then, there's an old video on YouTube. I did poetry in my school, in French school, and everyone else was like, my dog is brown. And my poem was about how you shouldn't make children kiss anyone. It was called Des Baisers. And I was like, Des Baisers, Des Baisers. It was like slam poetry about like
consent.
Consent. Yeah. And I looked at that and I was like, oh, I really got it. But at the same time, I think I
I didn't want to be part of that fight. I went, oh God. So instead, I worked at Hooters. And I
didn't know that.
And I had skin colored hair and hair colored skin and breast implants. And then I got my lips, like filler in my lips enlarged. And then I just thought, I want to be one of those girls that's quiet. Because I was always saying inflammatory things or upsetting me. I never meant to, but I thought the way that I am feels like a lot of work.
And then the only thing I used to want people to say about me was that I was nice.
Yeah.
I didn't care about anything else.
Right.
Not clever, not funny, not anything. I just wanted people to think I was nice.
So you spend a lot of your early childhood throwing all your tools away, going, I don't want to be clever. I don't want to be funny. I just want to be nice. I want to be nice and pretty and quiet. Yeah. Those were the things that I correctly thought would get me an easy life. And then I learned that the world was changing, and you do get bored doing that. It's sort of like those women who marry rich. You earn every penny,
and then one day it just all comes out.
Very funny. A lot of cardio.
But do you ever find you get kickback from the feminist community around those kind of things, or not really?
Well, we'll never be the perfect feminist or the perfect version of what someone else expects. I haven't actually had any like needles in my face in a while, but I will do again because I think it's fun. I got a little lost in the game for a while, and I think I had too much maybe a year and a half ago, and then I was like, whoa. But
I just got lost in the game with eyelashes. I went through like 6 months of fake eyelashes, and then the person doing my fake eyelashes found me on Instagram and sent me a message and said, you have to stop.
Really?
Yeah, she was like, they look awful. You have to stop. I'm coming over and taking them all out for free.
I don't remember a period of your eyelashes looking awful, I will say that. But one can easily get lost in the game, and that's the message.
But it's like a hobby. I think of it as a hobby. Boys are allowed to like football, and that's way more pointless than getting your eyelashes done. Connie, I want to ask you another question about your book because it's so amazing. Can you tell us a bit about what it's about and why it was so important for you to write a book about a girl, about a Bangladeshi girl, and about a girl who likes maths and science and all those things?
Well, you know what? So basically, like I said, I was like the first British Bangladeshi presenter, and I thought, but I'm normal too. So weirdly, when I was growing up, literature, any children's books about kids that were brown like me would be in this section in our local library, the international section. There were like three books in it, and it would be about, I don't know, Amaya in the village picks a mango for her mum.
Yeah.
And then
I've read that book.
You know the one.
It's great.
I had a choice of three books about the brown kid, and then she picks a mango from her mum in the village, and I thought, I can't relate to that. I don't pick mangoes for my mum. And, you know, so growing up, there weren't many books, which is probably why I wanted to be the same as those other people and have baked beans and fish and chips every night or whatever it was. And then, you know, I grew older and I realised, so I this year, the Carnegie Award, which is the medal for the best children's literature, went to a book about slam poetry, actually. But
Catherine, your forte.
Yeah, Catherine's.
Gros baiser mouillé de la voisine d'à côté. Un baiser plein de rouge à lèvres de la gardienne Marie-Ève. Can't do that.
Just like that.
That's good. So basically, the lady that wrote it, she said, wow, to think that I would have ever have won. And it was the Shadows Choice as well, which means children in schools up and down the country voted for it as well. And she said, because this is such a niche book about a black girl in the US growing up in a ghetto, and her parts of it are in Spanish. She's Hispanic. And then she hit upon it in that, like, we're all governed by, this is going to sound evil, feelings of the heart. So everything else is set dressing. So, you know, you're jealous of someone, you want to be someone, you love someone, whatever. That's all in here. All the rest is the set dressing that governs those feelings. So when you read the book, you can relate to those feelings, even if you can't relate to the set dressing. But then the set dressing educates you about being in another world. Books can take you to wherever you want to go, and they can educate, and they also breed empathy, especially in young people, which is really important for society in general, and not having serial killers and not having people join, I don't know, UKIP or whatever. But empathy is so important.
But also, I just hate the idea that when it comes to women and it comes to minorities, we're meant to only relate to books specifically about us. Like, I you know, I grew up thinking I was Harry Potter and wanting to be Harry Potter and like thinking Hermione was lame. And like all girls know how it feels to relate to boys and boys never have to do it in reverse.
And funny you should mention that book, because J.K. Rowling had to call herself J.K. Rowling because she knew if she put Joanne on the cover, there would be no girls, no boys buying that book compared to if she put J.K. Rowling on the cover. So I wanted to create a central female character that boys would buy into as well. So she's, and I was quite a tomboy. I mean, I grew up in a Muslim family. I grew up in trousers. So she's always in trousers anyway. And the title's a bit ambiguous. Lots of people think it is about a boy.
I thought it was about a boy for a minute and I was like, oh my God, how could she betray us like this? I'm not having her on my podcast.
Yeah, she's like, Connie, you sold out. And then she realised. But so I want, but also, like I was sort of saying about the girl in the village buying the mangoes as well, I often thought that things that were sort of told, said, you know, preached to me is like, this is a good book about social awareness and good values or whatever. They were often too preachy. So I always describe it as sort of Bridget Jones meets Wimpy Kid. And she is brown, but that's sort of secondary because everything, all the feelings that everyone feels are universal. And weirdly, I did economics as a degree subject in university, but this is this really weird parallel. But like, so in economics, there's left-wing thinking and right-wing thinking, right? I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but I really think it relates to people. In the right-wing thinking thinks if you increase the money supply, you increase the prosperity and the GDP of a nation. Yeah. Left-wing thinking thinks if you pump it into services and schools and hospitals and stuff like that, you increase the GDP of a nation. Both are right to some extent. But right-wing thinking only works in the short term because otherwise you get wage price inflation and it's all just back to the same level. I'm going to get to the point. I know you're all baffled.
It's good. It's a
whereas
lesson.
Whereas left-wing thinking, we live in a society with good hospitals and a brilliant NHS. And that's the same as people. So you can govern, right? All we want in life is happiness. But it's how we think we get that happiness. And in society, people think material goods give them that happiness. Mm. And you are happy when you get the iPhone 1000 for all of 3 seconds till the iPhone 2000 comes out. And it's that short-lived happiness before the wage price inflation has caught up.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're happy through loving Aisling and having, I don't know, having good friends or a partner or whatever, you know, affairs of the heart, that's longevity. And that can come and go, but you're not always chasing this dream, oh my gosh, I'm going off on one, aren't I?
No, it's so beautiful.
No, please,
I love
stop apologising for yourself, Connie. It's so interesting.
But it's like, when is enough enough? The iPhone 10,000 will come out and then infinity and we'll be chasing it and we're keeping up with the Joneses and trying to buy clothes that's next season the whole time, thinking that governs our happiness. Mm. And I know this seems like I'm going off piece, but happiness is sort of governed through in here. And so you need to find the happiness within, which is why, say, as women that feel we need to, I don't know, fit into this perception of what men want us to be or what society want us to be, that's never going to be real happiness because we're sort of doing it through this.
Well, you can't put it on, it has to come from within.
And commercial.
You know, it's being seen as a complex person with all of your flaws and still being loved and to be truly seen by someone. You know what it's like when someone's having a conversation and we're doing this? That's very different to someone looking at you in the eye and actually having a conversation with you. And that can't be fabricated. That's only made by biology. That's why we naturally come together as humans. It's in our biology that we have to come together or else we wouldn't procreate. We'd all go and live in the woods on our own. I know that's an ironic thing to say while we're all in the woods. But but it's actually...
live in the woods together.
Yeah. Well, guys, we can all have an open marriage. But there's something in our biology, how we're made up, to come together. And without that, it starts to have a detrimental effect on our bodies. And as a society, as we start kind of going away from each other more and more and connecting with each other through our phones rather than physical touch and eye contact and all sitting beside each other quite squashed in a tent, it has a neurological effect on us and a biological effect on us. And it's not good for us, basically.
Yes. I
Real
think it
point.
Can be.
I'm good
a,
for us.
No, it's a very good point. I think it can be. I'm a very big advocate of...
Thank you.
Yeah,
one person who's also my friend, Anna.
We'll have questions at the end. There'll be lots of questions. Yeah.
Reach out and touch each other, everybody. Reach out and touch each other.
I always say, I think for me, feminism was the beginning of when I became happy because it was the first time I wasn't sort of hating myself or thinking that everything bad that happened in my life was my fault. It was like the first time I realised that actually it was the world. I just think everyone was great, but I was awful. And then I realised it was the opposite way. I have a real question. I think it's very easy, you know, you guys obviously a feminist. Everyone in this room raised their hand. It's very easy at the moment to say you're a feminist by the ethical t-shirt. But it's sometimes quite hard to know what to do with that or how to kind of do feminism. How do you, all of you, feel you do your feminism in your everyday life? Because we're all too busy. I mean, I'm not. This is literally all I do. So.
I think friendship is a core thing. I remember, well, I might actually get emotional when I say this. I had a breakup, and I remember I've had two breakups. And this
with
is a
my
perfect
enemies.
Example. They are now Catherine's enemies. Like, I'm like, well, they're complicated people. And Catherine's like, they'll be in a grave by midnight, Schling. But like, here's a perfect example of how we all love in different ways and stuff like that. But I remember one time I was supposed to go to the BAFTAs with someone, and Catherine,
very relatable content,
just relatable. Hey guys, you know what it's like when you're on the way to a BAFTAs to present an award? You know what that's like? Am I right? No, but I had nothing to wear and I was really sad, and there was a knock at the door and it was an Uber, and Catherine had sent over a dress. And like, in that moment, it just needed to look nice. And the next day, I was voted one of the worst dressed of the actors. And can I tell you the reason? They said, Aisling B was a little too covered up. In that moment, Catherine put a dress in an Uber. And the thing I need was to sort of look pretty. And a similar thing happened a while ago when I went through another one of my famous breakups. Honestly, I got dumped more than puppies in January. Catherine was like, come over, B. And like, I again arrived over my Uber, and you just did my nails very nicely. And it's a moment of like human connection when you just need someone, and yourself and your partner, Bobby, just shuttled over the person.
And the next day, they were voted worst nails.
But you know, I took a chance on the salon. I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. But in those moments, I do think the tiny moments of friendship. And again, on that note, I remember reading a very early one of your scripts. And this was before Catherine had sort of shot off into the sky. And it was all about Hooters. Do you remember that script you wrote about Hooters and you'd sent to me? And it was set in Hooters and kind of based on your life. But the core theme of it, and this is pre-Bridesmaids or that movie, the core theme of it was friendship and connection. And in all their complicated ways, all these like weird people and bad people and people going, well, I remember there was one scene you were asking, one girl was asking the other girl to help her take a selfie squat in the toilet to send to a guy, and they were like helping each other. And even though that's obviously a comedy, quite sexual moment, there's the idea of helping each other and connecting, and just those moments when you can do a little thing for a pal. For me, that's they're the tiny little threads for anyone, and it's not just about female friendship or male friendship. It's about tiny moments of connection when you can help each other build you up, because you will get it back tenfold.
I mean, if we're going to categorize it as feminism, it should probably be about women, but
friendship. I just think male friendships look better, you know. lads.
Do you think that's practice. How you think of doing feminism? Do you think of those acts as feminism?
Yeah, because I think that female comedians especially do think of themselves as a collective and is very supportive. I don't know that it's the same everywhere or if it's exactly the same for the boys, but we are so super united, and I feel that what's good for one of us is good for the collective. Mm. I really do feel like that, and I think it's good to pretend to be someone's friend and then to send them a dress that gets them voted worse.
You bitch.
And
oh, I didn't get to my
point.
She
got voted best.
So the next day I was voted worse. So watch your back. That's all I'm saying with Catherine.
Yeah, but you know, you can always, in our specific position, the reason I sent Aisling that script is because anything that I'm doing, I'm thinking of how I can reach out to and also employ other women and get feedback from other women. And those women just happen to be some of my very greatest heroes and my friends.
Okay, should we take some audience questions? This woman has her hand up for ages. You can go first. Yeah.
I don't really know. That's not really a question, I guess. But
where are you?
Yeah. No, have you seen my tent?
No. My name's Sally Payne, and I'm 30 years old, and I'm just learning how to. How to accept myself, which has been difficult. I'm in recovery from an eating disorder, and I have a diagnosis of atypical autism. So it's been like hard to fit in, but yeah, I'm learning like to just accept myself and as I'm getting older, I think it's getting better.
Sally Payne!
That is so...
Woman,
really amazing. Thank you so much for saying that. I think, like, yeah, I'm so sorry it's been hard, and I know that feeling very, very well. And I had, as my family who's over there knows, came to this festival for 4 years in a row and had a panic attack at every single one. And one of them, I was so anxious, I then couldn't get in a car, so I had to walk home from here. It took like an hour, just crying and sobbing in a tutu. And it's really, really hard. And I never, ever thought that I'd get here or doing this or like be able to be at the festival. So it is possible. You are. Anyone else? You can do it. Sorry, because you've got the mic.
So when someone tells you they are not a feminist, what do you say to them? And do you ever worry about embodying the sort of stereotype of the angry feminist?
No.
Sometimes just protect yourself and don't say anything, because it's a lot of effort to try and convince someone to be a feminist over dinner in a pub. I do this really geeky thing where I always have a list of stats on my phone which like prove gender inequality. And then you don't have to like give emotional responses. You can just be like, well, actually, if you look at the gender pay gap, makes me really fun at parties. What do you guys do?
I think if somebody does say that, they're often looking, they want to, they're cruising for a bruising. So, you know, you can be the bigger person and sort of pity them. Pity's yeah. good, you know. Mm. I just think there's a lot of time to waste. I mean, if it's someone that's genuinely, you can make a judgment call. You know, genuinely, we can win them around to the cause, go for it. But I think most people that come out with statements like that, because if someone says they're not a feminist, feminism is about equality. And equality is about justice in society and just being a nice person. So you could just tell them they're not a nice person.
Also, they'll probably get it one day. Like,
cool the situation down.
When they're cruising for a bruising, just tell them they're not a nice person, yeah?
One of my things is no one ever says, I used to be a feminist and then I changed my mind. So it's something that, like, once it happens, you're through the looking glass, whatever. And I think some people, it takes them a while and you don't know what it's going to be. My mum texted me the other day and she was like, I finally got feminism. I was like, oh my god, how? She was like, The Incredibles 2. I was like, yeah, you've read my book, you've come to loads of these podcasts, I've made you read loads of Virginia Woolf, but I'm so glad it was Mrs. Incredible's plight to work that did it for you. Sorry, she's looking at me now, I feel embarrassed. Anyone else?
One, I'll
yeah,
take
sorry,
this
front people
here.
Really have priority, but they did also get here early.
I'm bloated, okay.
Hi, I think you're really cool, all of you. So I work in a job that's quite male-dominated. It's like typically male.
Right. What job is it?
So like, I work in an auction house.
Wow.
It's really cool, but like when you're booking in stuff and you have men being like, "Huh, you're doing this wrong."
Yeah, I've never seen a woman in an auction house.
Oh, there's like two of us. But basically, I don't know how, because if a man says something that's like horribly sexist or really makes me feel like crap, I'm just kind of like, oh, and then I go off and cry in a toilet. And sometimes, like, a Saturday morning is just, like, I would have cried, like, 4 times. That's the thing. I'm not an emotional person. But when it, like, grinds you down.
It hits you. It hits you in this, like, special place.
Even if it's one little thing when he's like, oh, you can't lift that. And I'm like, okay.
Probably can't, but still.
Like, how do you deal with it? Like, what do you do? Because I can't keep, like, you know, I'm going to lose it.
It's so hard.
We were talking about this the other night. Maya Angelou has a quote, is that you don't remember sometimes what people said, it's how they made you feel.
Yeah.
And if you're, it's very easy to be up here and be like, guys, we gotta collect. But if you're actually being made feel small constantly all the time and like you don't matter, you don't exist, it's very hard to just wake up every day and be like, I woke up like this and just suddenly walk into work with the backtrack on. And like, I remember when I did a panel show when I was just starting out, and I was the only girl in it, and I was really excited about doing it. And I noticed tiny little things from the start. The producer, one of the producers, like, oh no, there's going to be another girl on it now, and she's a celebrity. And so you guys could have a wee cat fight or something like that. That might be funny as a joke. And I was like, oh no, she's a model and I'm a comedian, so I'll just come up with jokes. And then they sent me home to the hotel to blow dry my hair, and I didn't realise all of the other male comedians were working on their jokes. And that night the show was a bit tired. It just didn't go that well. It was no big deal. But I kind of was powering ahead, and one of the male comedians in the bar afterwards, I was like, oh, do you have any feedback for me, by the way? Like, I'd love to learn and just get better, you know, like, they're not kind of new. And like, open up to criticism. And I remember he said to me, yeah, no, I do actually. Put it this way, a panel show is a family, and when daddy's talking, the little girl shuts the fuck up. And I'd love to say that I stood up and I was like, you know what? Me and my friends are going to earn more than you in 5 years' time. But I didn't. I went upstairs to the hotel and I cried and I cried and I cried. And it took me a year before I even had the confidence to think I could go on a panel show again. And it really, it grated away at me. I was like, oh, maybe I wasn't gracious. They must know what they're doing. They're the big boys. And it is hard to suddenly reboot yourself up when those little things, you can't lift this. It's always little jokes because you're on your own. And I do think that's when connecting to community, walking away, yeah, go to the bathroom and have your cry, but then don't keep going back in, like Amber and Michael in Love Island. Don't keep going back into those toxic situations. Deal with them, because you can't just leave your job, but go find your community, find a tend to people, and have the confidence to ask for a microphone, to ask a question. Go and find your online community, listen to the podcasts. It's not going to be ideal or fixed overnight, but slowly but surely at some point you'll be in a hiring position and you're going to say no to someone who looks like a little shit and hire someone who looks like you. Yeah. And it's slow but sure, but it is, like we were saying with Sally, it's little moments of physio for yourself and getting back that power, but to not lose your inner 6-year-old grit that knows she can do it. Or just get a big hammer and be like, order!
That is an amazing way to end, I think. And sorry, guys, you can just come find me around the festival and ask questions. I'm so sorry you've been through that. And I think just knowing, like, you have every single person in this tent and beyond, and we've all been through that, and you are the least alone person in the world, and he's actually alone because he's an idiot. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for showing up.
You have been listening to Feminists Don't Wear Pink, the podcast, hosted by me, Scarlett Curtis. The book is available everywhere books are sold, and 10% of every copy goes to the UN charity Girl Up. It's also available as an ebook and audiobook, read partially by me, if you prefer to listen. If you liked this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the podcast, and it helps us reach people who might not think they're feminists. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a feminist. Have a great day.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.